everybody, Bill Buckmaster ready to do this thing along with Ray Allen. Ray is producing and engineering our show on the other side of the glass. Together, Ray and I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday, February 25th, a lovely day in southern Arizona. We're coming to you live from AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. We live stream the show, buckmastershow.com. It kicks you over to the live stream at kvoi.com. And on my website, buckmastershow.com, we've got podcasts and pretty much every show we've done over the past 5 years with our radio project. We're going to begin as we get a full hour of content going, as usual, with a newsmaker interview with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek. That will be followed up by the campus and academic director here in Tucson for the University of Phoenix. Then we close out the show with UA climate scientist Zach Guido. Zach will hopefully tell us about the disappearance of the El Nino-related weather storms in southern Arizona. The Buckmaster Show live line open for you now, 790-2040, for your questions, comments, and suggestions. We invite you to become a friend of our program on Facebook. In addition, we do Twitter at Buckmaster Show. Let's welcome now the Ward 6 Tucson City Councilman, Democrat Steve Kasacek. Mr. Kasacek, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, Bill?
Very good. You have your cowboy outfit on today?
Actually, no. Kind of working on a new academic center and expanding our locker room for our new gymnastics coach and putting new seating in the lower bowl of the football stadium. So, got other things going on.
Yes, you do. Yeah. I keep seeing these posts on Facebook, the city's on the verge of bankruptcy. Is it that bad? And where does this stuff come from?
Well, if we did nothing, then the posts would be true. But we're not doing nothing. And so that's, you know, as the, you know, the tagline is, as you know, that's the rest of the story. And so the what we're doing is we're looking real hard at the budget right now, and we still have a $25 million hole to fill before July 1st of this year. And we've done things such as offer early retirement incentives. We've changed the medical benefits for people. We've issued pink slips to some people. We're going to have a tough hill to climb here between now and July 1st. And so what I think likely will happen is that we're going to have a pretty austere budget, which is fine to a point. But encapsulated in the word austere is also reductions in services to the community. And so what we will probably have is we've got our charter review committee right now looking at various options for changing our charter, one component of which will likely be changes in our tax base, either sales or property tax. Now, we have to go to the voters to change our charter, and so what we're going to have, and I'm just speculating because we're not done with this process, but what we'll likely have is a budget proposal for July 1st that says if the voters say no to whatever we put on the ballot in November, here's what the budget's going to look like, and that's where the austerity comes in. If, on the other hand, the voters agree to just picking a number, a half-cent sales tax increase, then here are the kinds of things that we'll be able to do and peel back some of the cuts. An example that I gave last night, just one of many possible examples, I gave it at a budget forum that we held at my office, is, for instance, Parks and Recreation Department about a $38 million budget line item in the general fund. A half-cent sales tax yields about $45 to $50 million. If we were to say to the voters, if you agree to a half-cent sales tax, we would pull Parks and Recreation out of the general fund, free up that $38 million, cap their budget at, say, $40 million, and throw the rest of the half-cent sales tax back into the general fund so that the voters know exactly what we're doing with the money. But that will free up $38 to $45 million for things such as new police vehicles and new fire paramedic vehicles and those kinds of things that we really, really need. We passed Prop 409 a few years ago. That's the road bond budget, and we passed it by a sliver. And I'm convinced that the primary reason that that thing passed was because we were very specific with the voters, saying, here are exactly the roads that we're going to fix, and we listed them and showed them exactly what to expect. And there's a whole issue of integrity built into that. And so if we just simply go out and say, give us a half-cent sales tax, people will justifiably say no.
There was a lot of confusion, apparently, on this voter poll that was done, about the way the city elects council people. There's confusion there. I would suspect that's not too big a surprise. But 52% of the city voters said they would oppose a half-cent sales tax if they didn't know where the money was going.
Right, and that's exactly my point.
Yes.
So if we're going to go to the voters and say, we have a structurally imbalanced budget, we have a couple of things we can do. We can either just cut to the bone, and quite frankly, that's going to involve reductions in services, some of our core services, and that's not scare tactic, it's just the reality. We have to find $25 million in 2 months, and then we're going to have to find another 30 or 40 next year, and it continues on from there. People need to understand a large reason for this is the public safety pension, and that is something that we're going to owe $53 million on this fiscal year, and that's going to escalate to north of $80 million next fiscal year. Those are not benefits that we control at the city council, but we pay the bill. They're controlled at the state. The reason that is ballooning is because a couple of years ago, the state legislature made two changes in the public safety pension. Both of the changes were challenged by the public safety unions in court. They've already won one of them, and they're likely going to win the second because the state constitution says you cannot diminish the value of somebody's pension. And effectively, what the legislation did was diminish the value. And so that's the reason we're going to see this balloon. You're going to see a voter initiative from the state in May, and it will be about public safety pension. It's not going to fix it for us in the immediate future because it's not going to. The only effect it's going to have on existing cops and firefighters is it's going to cap their cost of living adjustment from 4% down to 2%. Until those workers, the existing workers, sort of work their way through the system, it's not going to help our general fund in any considerable degree.
Well, what are some of your thoughts on the city voters being so confused about our election system?
Well, we have a hybrid system. It's been challenged in court. By hybrid, I mean we choose candidates at the ward level, and then we elect have the election on a citywide basis. I hear oftentimes during election cycles, whether it's mine or the other council members in the off years, that I don't live in their ward, so I can't support or vote against them. Well, we do have a citywide election. So the Charter Review Committee is also looking at our governance, and so they are likely going to come back with a recommendation that we put on the ballot some options for people. Do you want to go ward only? Do you want to go at large city, or do you want to maintain the existing system we have? But again, that's a charter change, and so mm-hmm. We just can't legislatively make the change. The voters are going to have to agree to it. And before we get off the budget thing, I do want to mention one quick thing. We can talk, and we have talked for the last 6 years since I started doing this, about deficits and cutting the budget and reductions of services and fee increases and all that. That's the challenge we've had. But the long-term answer to our budget situation is growing our tax base. And I had Sharon Bronson and Chuck Huckleberry sit in on a study session back in December to talk about the Sonoran Corridor. Sonoran Corridor is the connection between I-10 and I-19 out by Raytheon. We just lost an $817 million bond package. The Sonoran Corridor was one of the 99 questions, and the voters were overwhelmed by the mm-hmm. scope and scale of the package. If we could pull that item out and single-shot it, I think we can make a very compelling case, because what it does, very simply, is it capitalizes on the $200 million investment that Tucson International Airport is putting into their facilities. It capitalizes on the rail spur that Port of Tucson is connecting with Union Pacific. And as I mentioned, it's the I-10, I-19 connection. So we're talking about air cargo, freight, over on the rail cargo. We're talking about over the road cargo. We're talking about international commerce with Mexico, and we're talking about protecting and preserving Raytheon with the and the Sonoran Corridor connection. Would be jobs such as manufacturing, logistics, the high-paying jobs that we're going to have to really expand our tax base here. You know, I'm a real proponent of the downtown redevelopment.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing well. Those are service sector jobs, and they're not going to pull us out long-term. They're not going to pull us out of this deficit.
Well, stick around, Steve Kasachek, as I tell our listeners about our new sponsor, Janos Wilder's Carriage House, speaking of downtown. That opening is coming up this Saturday. It's a new special events venue and cooking school located in a historic 100-year-old building. Beautiful wood floors, original brick walls. Much of the building retains touches of the initial space. It's just a beautiful transformation. And Janos himself is going to be teaching that first class, and it's from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. this Saturday at the Carriage House. And this class is celebrating Tucson's designation as a UNESCO City of Gastronomy. So there are going to be a variety of cooking classes offered year-round. The best thing to do is go to their website. They've got it up now, and it looks really good, the web. CarriageHouseTucson.com is the best place to find out more about the Carriage House. 1216 on Buckmaster, back with Steve Kasachek right after this.
Local Tucson business, American Openings, is pleased to be a sponsor of Gospel Rescue Mission. They're on a mission to restore lives that are afflicted by homelessness, hopelessness, and addiction. Each day, the Gospel Rescue Mission in Tucson houses, feeds, and ministers to hundreds of men, women, and children. Gospel Rescue Mission, where homelessness ends and lives are restored. You can learn more at grmtucson.com. American Openings is proud to support Gospel Rescue Mission.
The Regional Transportation Authority is funding new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The 20-year RTA plan also includes roadway improvement projects and transit service enhancements to get you where you want to go. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region safer and more accessible. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
Twelve 20 now on the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, State Senator Steve Farley, who said we are seeing the end of public education in Arizona. That it was his declaration this week. We'll hear from him tomorrow. Very upset about what the school voucher measure moving through the legislature. You know, Steve Kasachek is with us, Tucson City Councilman, Ward 6. Steve, we used to make so many movies here in Tucson. I was watching The Outlaw Josie Wales last night. Great movie. Had never seen it before. Filmed with directed by Clint Eastwood, 1976. It was wonderful to see the scenes of Tucson, an old Tucson, Mescal. We used to be the movie capital of the southwestern United States. We've relinquished that to New Mexico, where the industry is booming. What can we do to make movies again here?
Well, that is such an important issue. If I could work with Steve Farley and some of the others up in the state legislature, the first immediate thing that I would do is to reinstate the statewide incentive that this state used to have in place. And once we dropped it, we became flyover country. You just correctly mentioned that New Mexico and is poaching some of the films and the ads and the episodics that should be coming here. A couple of years ago, I worked with Visit Tucson, Shelley Hall at the film office down there, mm-hmm. as well as some of the people from the county. And we put together the best we could a local incentive package. Visit Tucson offered up some cash. The county offered some cut rates to Old Tucson and Mescal, some of the properties that they control. And the city agreed to offer some cut rates also. But we're 30% behind our competitors in other states without that statewide incentive. Shelley's got another major motion picture that's coming in here next month. They're going to be filming out at Old Tucson. But I think we can do so much better, not that Westerns are bad, but I think that mm-hmm. we can do so much better than simply the Westerns taking advantage of those that set out there. I mean, look at the geography. If you're coming into Tucson, mm-hmm. You can film in an urban downtown setting. Within a half an hour, you can be out in a Sonoran Desert setting, and within an hour, you can be up on top in pine,
right.
up and you don't have to move your crew all over the place. Mm-hmm. So we have everything in place in terms of the geography, the environment. What we don't have in place is a statewide incentive that could be drawn up, and we've had them in front of the legislature the last 2 years up at the state, that do not require money coming out of the general fund until the film production crew actually puts money into the local community. So you put money in, you take some of that money back out and churn it back into the film. That's the ultimate answer, Bill.
And people complain, this is, you know, such a low-wage town, the economy is awful. Well, this is a no-brainer, the tourism and the film industry. I just don't get it.
I had Andy Biggs say to me about 2 years ago that he did not support this because he doesn't support, quote, targeted tax breaks. That's just fiction. They're offering targeted tax breaks to high-tech computer companies if they wind up opening up in Chandler, somewhere in Maricopa County. The ACA, the Arizona Commerce Authority, absolutely focuses dollars on Maricopa County. So we're kind of suffering the poor stepchild syndrome because we're down here in southern Arizona. I understand the competition. But this state legislature is hypocritical. vocal, if nothing else, about that mantra that they don't support targeted tax breaks. Further, I would say that this is not money that would be coming out of their general fund. As I said, if the film production crew puts money into a locality, into a jurisdiction, then they get to pull some of those dollars back out and churn them back in. We're talking about jobs all over the economy. When a film production crew comes into a location, they're renting hotel rooms, they're eating at our restaurants, they're renting the venues that they're filming at, they're hiring pre- and post-production, but they're also building sets.
Yeah. I mean, look,
that's hardware, that's paint, that's labor, it's actors and actresses. So it would have a wonderful effect all over the economy, and I would love to see the state get behind it.
Steve Kosacek, there's confusion. My friends over at the Reed Park Zoo are worried about a proposed fee increase that would not go to their facility.
I ran some history on that, looked at the numbers, and we have raised fees twice in the last 7 years since I started this. Two things happened when we raised those fees. The attendance went down, and the general fund subsidy to the zoo went up. And the reason for that is that the critters are going to eat regardless of whether or not you and I are standing there staring at them. So the costs are what they are. So I'm absolutely opposed to raising their fees unless we can just churn those dollars back into the zoo. They have a wonderful conservation program, and they have infrastructure needs out there. So that would be the only basis on which I'd support that. The only two exceptions to the drop in attendance were when we opened the Tanzania exhibition, the elephant thing, and when the little baby elephant was born. People came out to see the new exhibits, but not just, hey, we're just going to raise the fees.
The business community, as you know, is literally freaking out over this talk of requiring paid sick leave. Where is that going, or is that dead on arrival?
Well, it certainly wasn't dead on arrival. The council and the mayor voted 6-1, me being the one, to form a stakeholder committee to study it. I will say that from the standpoint of the spirit of what's being proposed, everybody, myself included, on the council would support it. We want the most needy in our community to have all the opportunities that they can, but it strikes me that there's a bit of hypocrisy at our end when we are balancing our budget. One of the ways we're doing that is reducing our health plan benefits, and we're saying to the business community at the same time, if you want to come and open up a business in Tucson, we're going to increase your benefit package. We haven't seen the end of that yet. We may likely be looking at something tied to procurement so that it would be something along the lines, if you want to do business with the city of Tucson, a part of the procurement package is that you offer sick time off. But I just don't think that the council is going to come back around and say, yeah, we're going to impose that on every business in the city.
Overall, you're pleased the way downtown is going right now?
Yeah, really. There's a lot going on, Bill. I mean, you mentioned Llanos.
Yeah.
We have the AC Marriott going in. We're about to break ground on the Ronstadt Transit Center. We have apartments going in on Stone. There's a Westerner Hotel remodel. The Diocese is looking at a major renovation on their property, 1 West Broadway. So there's a ton going on. And I brought several city staffers together last week with some private sector architects to say, look, this is all happening almost simultaneously, and if we don't up our game from the standpoint of plan review and project management, those projects are going to implode on one another. And they get it, and it's a good news, bad news thing. The great news is that we're having all these projects happen simultaneously. We need the construction jobs and the tax base. The challenge, though, is up in our game so that we manage the projects well.
I'd like to see a dedicated gem show kind of convention area, wouldn't you?
Well, you're going to maybe see that with the NorGen property. That's the Alan Norville's property over there at the arena parcel. That's one that I did not mention, and that's something that Rio Nuevo is negotiating with them right now. And you're also going to possibly see something down closer to I-19 and the old Giffords property along the freeway. And we have some private sector people looking at buying city property and turning them into gem show properties, because right now they come in for 6-8 weeks, and the rest of the year you just see the steel structures without without the tents on them.
Only got about a minute left. The Broadway widening, can you give us a very quick update on that, please?
The middle of April, the community will be able to see the 30% construction design proposal. It'll be at the Sabar Shrine Temple. I don't have the date in my head, but it'll be on site. If somebody wants to get the date and time of it, go to rtamobility.org and go on to projects, and the Broadway project is right in that right in the drop down menu.
All right, I'm going to squeeze one quick call in. Gloria, I've got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
So, is anything happening with the hotel downtown in Humberto Lopez's hotel?
Humberto Lopez has made a very general proposal that I find unacceptable from the standpoint of the city of Tucson taxpayers subsidizing him for too long a period of time. What they are proposing to do, though, is do something with La Placita, which they also own, and that might have a catalytic effect on the hotel.
Okay, Steve Kasachek, we're right at 12:30, out of time. Thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. That's Steve Kasachek, the Ward 6 Tucson City Councilman. We are at the halfway point of the Buckmaster Show. We have much more to come. We're going to be hearing about the University of Phoenix. That's coming up next on Buckmaster. And this portion of the Buckmaster Show is brought to you by our friends at Green Things. You know, I've been going to Green Things probably, well, let's say many, many years. And I always find exactly what I'm looking for. I love roses. All the roses I've gotten over there, terrific. Still alive, doing very well. And one of the big reasons, they grow all this stuff right here. It doesn't come in from out of town. In fact, they've got 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Good weekend to get out there and do gardening. I strongly suggest a visit to Green Things just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. The address, 3384 East River Road. You can get right in off of River. GreenThingsAZ.com is a good place to start. Their fine website. Back right after this. Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, our Friday Focus interview is with Steve Farley, state senator. The Friday Roundtable features Tim Steller of The Star and Jim Nintzel of The Weekly. Matt Russell hosts Weekend Watch. It's Buckmaster noon to 1 on Tucson's Voice, AM 1030 KVOI, and always on my website, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, 12:36 on this lovely Thursday in Tucson, Arizona. Time for our CEO interview series on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Sun Corridor Incorporated, Inc., which offers a comprehensive approach of programs and services to facilitate the creation of high-wage jobs through the attraction of new primary companies, the retention and expansion of existing primary companies, and increased business creation and entrepreneurship strength within our region. Since 2005, Sun Corridor, Inc. has facilitated over 100 relocations and major expansions in Southern Arizona, representing more than 27,000 direct and indirect jobs and an overall economic impact of nearly $8 billion. For more information, visit suncorridorinc.com. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line is Sun Corridor, Inc. board member, Dr. Mark Vitale, campus and academic director for the Southern Arizona campus of the University of Phoenix. That's an organization that Dr. Vitale has been with for the past 14 years. He's been based right here in Tucson, and during the past 25 years, Dr. Vitale has worked in a marketing capacity for the Walt Disney Company, Bass Hotels and Resorts, and the Pima Air and Space Museum. Dr. Vitale, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. How are things going at the University of Phoenix? First of all, for folks that don't know, the University of Phoenix isn't just based up in Phoenix.
That is true. And actually, we don't even really reference the city in our name, even though we are based up there. But it, in fact, references the mythological creature, the phoenix, who rises from the ashes. And that is really representative of our students, who are, for the most part, adults, working adults with families who have gotten to a point in their life where they discovered that they either need and or want additional education for a variety of reasons. And the university really has developed, over its 40 years, a pretty unique and innovative teaching-learning model and environment for students that allows the working adult to rise from those proverbial ashes and realize their dreams. So things are great at the university. We've been in Tucson for almost 40 years. We're the second oldest campus nationally for the university, so we'll be celebrating that anniversary next year. But we just finished a multi-million dollar reimagining of our campus here in the Tucson location. And we're only the fourth location nationally to get that. So all new types of classrooms. They don't even look like classrooms anymore. They're boardroom styles because what literature has told us is adults learn better in familiar environments, and most of us are more familiar nowadays at our ages with a meeting room or a boardroom style than, say, a traditional classroom. So we just literally finished that. We had our ribbon cutting 2 weeks ago and are really enjoying the new space.
What is the venue? Where is the venue, I should say?
We actually have two locations in Southern Arizona, one locally here in Tucson, one out in Yuma. The one in Tucson is on Craycroft, just a block south of Broadway. So we're in the Williams Center complex, which is kind of nice because that's really the business district and the central district for Tucson.
Who would you say, if you had to kind of your typical student, I know there is no such thing as a typical, but who are you, your mission is aimed at one particular age group or what type of modality?
We tend not to define our students by an age. What we look at in higher education as a whole, and certainly the University of Phoenix, the types of risk factors that that students have when they come back to college, so we can better prepare our own initiatives and programs for their success. So the Department of Education has outlined its top 8 risk factors. Coincidentally enough, the University of Phoenix has students who pretty much fall into all 8 of those simultaneously. They're things like they've attempted college before, they're a part-time student. The older the student gets, the more risk there is. Is the student financially independent? Does the student have dependents, either older or younger, to care for? Does the student work at a paying job? And is there a blended or online learning modality associated with the curriculum? And so we would define our student as actually existing in all 8 of those. When you look at a traditional student, they might fill 4, 3, 2. But University of Phoenix students do tend to be a little older. They're a little more developed in their career. As far as our learning modalities go, we actually offer 3 primary types of modalities. We have a face-to-face, which you would consider a traditional modality where you go to a classroom and there's other students and there's a faculty member there. We also have a purely online modality where you're interacting asynchronously with people across the country and in some cases on the other side of the planet. And then we have a blended modality where you're taking both the level of engagement from a traditional classroom and merging it with the convenience of an online modality.
What kind of challenges adults, obviously, that are going to go back to school? Most of them probably have a day job, right? And they've got other responsibilities. So how do you work that out, Dr. Mark Vitale?
Well, what's really important is to not skimp at all on the academic quality and the rigor. These are the same types of college credits that a student would get at a traditional university like the University of Arizona. But in this case, really look at how the delivery and more importantly, the engagement of the student occurs. So the university prides itself on a very flexible scheduling of classes. We are a year-round institution. We don't operate on semesters. We don't take summer off because working adults don't take time off. You and I are both working through the summer, and that is what our modality is planned around. It's an accelerated academic model where the students will earn 3 college credits, but instead of doing so in disassociated 15 to 18 weeks, undergraduate courses are 5 weeks long, and graduate courses are 6 weeks long, and those will meet for 4 hours or the equivalent of 4 hours a week. But it is an accelerated learning model. And within that learning, there's a very innovative teaching and learning model that we train our faculty very rigorously on. And it deals with relevancy. Adults absolutely want to know why they're learning what they're learning. I was a product of traditional education, and my faculty told me, you're going to learn this because it's in the curriculum, and we told you to do it.
Oh, yeah, I remember those days.
You remember those days,
I certainly
right?
Well, do. Right?
Today, students don't buy into that. They really want to know, why am I spending my time on this? Because I've got so many things to focus on, kids and work and life. So if I'm going to spend my time studying, I want to know why. So relevancy of the curriculum. Lecture-based instruction is great for certain types of learning, but the type of student who's successful at the University of Phoenix really likes to be engaged, likes to roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty, so to speak. So a facilitative environment where a faculty leads students to learn through discovery and engagement instead of lecture-based modality. And then there's also a strong focus that we train our faculty with on evaluating and assessing specific learning objectives so that we can point quantitatively to achievement of learning, and our faculty can say, okay, our students learned this, they didn't learn that, we need to spend a little more time on that. And of course, our faculty are absolutely key and instrumental to this. They're not just educators, but more importantly, they are practitioners. They have spent an average of 16 to 20 years of work experience in the field that they're teaching, and I can tell you it's a very rigorous process to become faculty. It takes about a year with the trainings and the certifications and the evaluations and the mentorships, and once you get through that, there's annual certification and ongoing development so that faculty can remain approved to teach in a class. And those approvals are constantly being reviewed against both what industry is requesting. We have industry councils on a college level, so we'll meet, for example, in our School of Business with folks like Hilton Hotels or Intuit and have extensive collaboration about what they need in their workforce so that we can incorporate that in the curriculum.
All right. Dr. Vitale, where can we get more information about your organization, the University of Phoenix?
Well, you can go online to www.phoenix.edu, and we just launched a new website about 3 weeks ago. Our marketing department has spent a good year revising that, so lots of information about the programs, the courses of study. You can also call our local campus here. It's, of course, an area code of 520. It's local here in Tucson, 239-5225.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mark Vitale. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Thanks a lot. Dr. Mark Vitale from the University of Phoenix. He's a member of the Sun Corridor, Inc. Board of Directors. Our CEO interview series on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Sun Corridor Incorporated, Inc., and you can find out more about what they're doing in economic development by visiting suncorridorinc.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, five kids, two grandchildren, and termites. Termites is serious business. I'm telling you, talk about eating your home away. They can do it. Best call ever made, five-star. Five-star termite and pest control. A great job. They leave no mess. They're economical. And guess what? They're friendly to our environment. 886-0045.
We're five-star pest control. We know what bugs you.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions work together to deliver regional transportation improvements that are funded by the RTA's 20-year plan. So far, more than 700 transportation improvements have been completed, like enhanced transit services, new bike lanes and sidewalks, expanded roadways, and new traffic signal technologies. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. Great environment over there in southwestern New Mexico, one of the beautiful places of the southwestern United States. If you've not visited the Gila National Wilderness, which was the nation's first national wilderness, or the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, be a great weekend getaway for you, especially with this very mild temperatures we're having. Great places to stay over there, like Bear Creek Cabins, the full listing of places to stay, and the many things to do, the many ways to recreate at southwestnewmexico.org. Well, whatever happened to the El Nino-related weather winter storms? We explore that question with Dr. Zach Guido. Zach is a climate scientist with the University of Arizona Climate Assessment for the Southwest Group at the UA-based Institute of the Environment. Zach, good to see you.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
You've been down in Jamaica in January and a lot of February, and you have missed out on what has turned out to be a very strange winter.
It has, but I've kept my eye on it because, as you say, it's somewhat not been what we expected.
What happened?
Well, that's a very good question. I was trying to come up with a concise way of describing this the last 5 months or so from a climate standpoint. And, you know, I think there's a lot of nuances to it. So I'll take a stab at it.
Okay.
For the first part, I think that the big climate story of the last decade, if not more than that, has been this El Nino event that materialized in the summer. It's become one of the three largest, strongest on record. If not the strongest, depends how you measure it, but it's within the top three. You have to go back to 97, 98 to have a rival event. So as a climatologist, this was the thing. And mm-hmm. The reason we pay so much attention to it, because the climate's a complex system, but knowing what's going on in the tropical Pacific Ocean provides a pretty good hint at what's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 months, particularly in the winter. And so the strong event materialized in the summer. It reached a strong, if not the strongest, intensity by early winter. And, we had a pretty good October.
Yes, we did.
Pretty wet October. And
wildflowers in Death Valley are almost, they're saying, the best in 20 years.
That's right.
Because we had that rain.
Yeah, we had
October,
that early
November.
Early
yeah.
winter rain.
Yeah.
But November was dry, and mm-hmm. then December, about half of the state became wet and half
right.
of the state became dry. January became wet,
did,
and then
yeah.
February has dropped off. You know, the precipitation just hasn't occurred.
And some of the warmest temperatures, I haven't seen the numbers, but I would venture to say it's going to go down in the record books. One of the warmest, certainly, Februarys and driest.
Yeah, it's been warm and dry, and those two are related. And so when you put all of this together, the winter has been, you know, when you include October, the winter has been average, which, you know, if you wipe away our expectations from this big El Nino event, if you take that away, it's been, you know, we wouldn't be talking about the conversation. You wouldn't have led with what you led with, which is
right,
where did the weather
go? The precipitation numbers look about average for where we should be right now.
Right.
Yeah.
But the big El Nino event tends to produce above average precipitation here in the Southwest. And because strength does matter, there was expectation that this winter would be, you know, there'd be copious amounts of rain. We just haven't experienced that.
But in other places of the world, El Nino is really rearing its head. The strongest cyclone ever recorded in the South Pacific hit Fiji. The Azore Islands in the mid-Atlantic had an unprecedented weather event happening in January. A strong hurricane.
Right. I'm really glad you brought this up, because the El Nino event is, and its counterpart, La Nina, has global implications. It's not just what happens here. And in addition to what you said, Southern Africa and Ethiopia region is experiencing some of the worst drought conditions that they've had in their record.
Australia, too.
And Australia and northern Brazil, eastern Brazil as well, has experienced wetter conditions. So you see the imprint of this El Nino. Here in Arizona and Southern California, it hasn't sort of lived up to our expectations. Part of that is because the jet stream has been shifted slightly north. So whereas we would tend to think that during El Nino events, Southern California and Arizona and New Mexico would be slightly above average in precipitation to a lot above average, that sort of signal has been a little bit further north than we otherwise would have expected. Mm-hmm. And I think it just goes to show you that the sort of nuances of what's going on in the climate matter, and they can have pretty wide-ranging effects downstream.
And up in the Pacific Northwest, they have had a very good rain and snow year, which they really needed after many, many years of drought up there. And of course, hopefully that will translate into less fire events,
right,
when we get into the summer and fall.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, I think, speaking of fire, because that is the season that we're now moving into here in the Southwest, to see how this winter would have impacted the fire risk. I mean, it wasn't a bad winter, but perhaps it wasn't as wet as we would have liked. So we'll have to wait for those fire predictions to come out.
And Zach Guido was not down in Jamaica on vacation. He was actually working. And I said at the beginning of the interview, for like 6 weeks he was in Jamaica. Oh, that's pretty nice, you know. No, he has been working. And anyone that loves coffee, and Zach, I know you do, you've been working in the Blue Mountain Range of Jamaica on the island. Absolutely gorgeous interior there. And that's where the famous Blue Mountain coffee comes from. Very pricey, right up there with Kona as far as pricey coffee worldwide. But what were you doing down there with the coffee growers?
Well, I've been pretty fortunate to work in that area, because it's spectacular. But we've been working, it's a joint project with the Columbia University, and we've been looking at climate impacts on coffee farmers in an attempt to see if there's opportunities for information to help them, you know, better produce coffee. And, you know, the story that's coming out of the Jamaican Blue Mountain farmers, because we've been talking to a lot of farmers, is a climate story. And it's about the drought that they've been experiencing in the last 2 years, which has an El Nino fingerprint to it. And there's a lot of concern, obviously, in that area, because the coffee farmers don't have a lot of resources. And so even slight deviations in the climate can have huge impacts on their productivity.
And coffee is, I'm not an expert by any means, but I've been in many coffee growing areas in my travels around the world. It's very, very sensitive to climate.
Sensitive to
The elevation is extremely important, mm-hmm. and the climate, the variables in the climate can impact the entire crop.
That's right. It can impact the quality, the quantity, it also influences. One of the things that we're studying down there is the incidence of coffee leaf rust, which has a global signature right now. And a couple of years ago, there were these flare-ups in Latin America that reduced productivity to the tune of $350 million. So huge impacts. And those coffee leaf rust spores tend to proliferate more under wet conditions than under dry conditions. So on the one hand, the drought in the last couple of years has sort of suppressed that disease, while on the other hand, it's also reduced their productivity. So, you know, it's a hard thing to actually understand the final impact.
Our final seconds with you, Zach. The next couple of weeks, well, we know it's going to be dry and warm probably the next couple of weeks, but we got to get rain in March or we're not going to expect much.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think, you know, the winter basically ends at the end of March, and mm-hmm. the next 2 weeks are looking dry, but we're probably going to experience one or another storm system that would come in. So I would expect another rain event. But I think at the end, when we do the numbers, the total precipitation in this area won't have lived up to the expectation by this El Nino event. But it wouldn't have been bad either.
All right. Zach Guido, thank you very much, Zach.
Thank you.
Coming up this afternoon, 4 Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw and Ray Allen. Then tomorrow morning, 6 to 8, Wake Up Tucson, Chris and Joe, The Daily Double, 8 to 9, Sean McCluskey, 9 to 10. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you. Tomorrow's Friday. That means we do a special Friday Focus interview. Tomorrow will be with State Senator Steve Farley. And then we'll do our Friday Roundtable, the special show that we do every Friday here on Buckmaster, getting on underway at 12:04 tomorrow. Until then, Ray Allen, my producer, and I wishing you a great afternoon and evening tonight, 4 o'clock this afternoon for the debate right here, coverage on KVOI.